to change that, what they have observed. But the help that we get through the meditation, through the meditative absorptions, is immeasurably beneficial. It brings the mind not only to a different level of consciousness in meditation, but because there is concentration, the mind finds it easier to stay with what it wants to do, namely substitute anger with compassion. The other meditative factor which arises simultaneously with the delightful sensation is joy, sukha. And it arises at the same time because there's no way it can't. When there's delight, there's also joy. In the first instance, the delightful sensation is overriding because it is usually the stronger. So that is the constitution then of the first jhana. The joy becomes the second jhana. Joy is an antidote for restlessness and worry. Restlessness is again only totally eliminated for the non-returner. The restless mind is due to the fact that we haven't found total inner joy. We haven't found what we are looking for. And we haven't found what we know exists. We know it subconsciously or consciously, that there is something that exists. All religions talk of it. Very often in such terms that one can't relate to it, because it seems to be fairy tale, fantasy, or requiring a kind of life one is not willing to lead. Or it requires blind faith, believing something one can't really believe. So very often, while all religions speak of the possibility of finding the kingdom of heaven within, most people don't know how to go about it, unfortunately. Because also, it is so much written in symbolic language, and so often, instead of explained symbolically, understood to be literal. So that is not useful. But the Buddha's explanations are pragmatic, realistic. One can say that he was the first and greatest psychologist ever. If we use his teaching as understanding our own psychology, we don't need anything else. It's all encompassing. This inner joy as an antidote for restlessness and worry happens as an antidote because we got what we wanted. We have joy. We don't go around saying, I'm looking for joy. We don't even admit it to ourselves. But we do want it. And all our entertainments are geared towards that. They're supposed to bring us joy. Well, this goes far beyond having an entertainment that brings joy. The joy which we can experience, and which then becomes the second jhana, and can only be experienced if we drop the delightful sensation, has a more refined quality than any joy that we've ever had through the senses. Now, on a practical level, if we have come to the first jhana, and have had the delightful sensation and stayed with it for 10 or 15 minutes, it then is necessary to deliberately drop the attention to that delightful sensation, because one knows that it's still a gross happening, and one is going to reach for much more subtle and refined states. Having dropped it deliberately, the attention goes to the inner joy, which is then existing and was existing already in conjunction with the delightful feeling, but first we pay attention to that, to the delightful sensation. So having dropped it deliberately, we go to the joy. The joy is a more subtle and finer state because it's an emotion, whereas the first one was a physical sensation. As we go on, the jhanas become more and more refined, more and more subtle, particularly when we go to the higher jhanas. As an antidote against restlessness and worry, it works during the meditation, quite obviously, because we have that, what we're always looking for. But also, it has a residual effect. We know that joy sits within us. All we need is to get there, to touch it, to confront it, to experience it, to live with it during meditation. And therefore, much of our restlessness and our worry is eliminated. The restlessness which pushes us to do something different, to find a different teacher, to look for a different living space, to find a different partner, to find a different job, all that restlessness, which we can observe at every airport, which we can observe on every highway and freeway in the world, all that is no longer a pressure system within us. We have already found what we were so desperately looking for, joy. The same goes for worry. We worry about the future. We worry about the past. We worry about what we can't do. We worry about what we can do. Worry is something that is so inbred and ingrained in us that we can worry about anything, anything at all. We can worry about the fact whether the sun shines or rain comes. We can worry about anything. That too, while both of them are not eliminated, are much reduced. We know there's really nothing to worry about. And these are the insights which arise out of the second jhana, out of the experience of joy. Namely, there's nothing to find anywhere outside of ourselves, and there's nothing to worry about. We've got it. It's within us. We all carry it. We actually know that we carry it. And we may have had an inkling of it in a very mundane situation when we have become overjoyed with an experience of a new baby or the experience of beautiful nature happening. And we've had that experience. We know it's within us. But until we experience it in the meditative absorption, we think and believe that we need the outer trigger in order to arouse it. Now we know no outer trigger. Not knowing that we don't need an outer trigger makes us far more independent. And the liberation of which the Buddha speaks has, of course, as one of its constituents, independence. Independence from the emotions of others, independence from our sense contacts, independence from the thoughts of others, a feeling of being at ease with oneself. Restlessness and worry are described by the Buddha as being slaves. If one is restless or worries, one is a slave to it. One is being pushed around by them. Naturally, we don't want to be slaves. Just as we have the antidote in the meditation. We have the antidote in daily living because there's a residual effect. The fifth of the factors of meditation is one-pointedness. I'm going to repeat the five factors of meditation. Initial application to the meditation subject, sustained application to the meditation subject, delightful sensation, joy, one-pointedness. Vitaka, vichara, piti, sukha, and ekagata. The five hindrances which are confronted and helped to be removed through those five factors of meditation in their usual order: sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, and skeptical doubt. One-pointedness works against sensual desire. Obviously, during meditation, very effectively. If we're one-pointed, we can't have desire. If we're one-pointed on our meditation subject, which in this case might be either the delightful sensation or the joy, we can't be thinking about lunch, wanting it, or the pain in the knee, or whatever else we have as a momentary sensual desire. The first jhana, the delightful sensation, contains all five factors. The second one drops the first two. There's no longer needed the initial application, nor is the sustained application needed because it becomes automatic. So the second jhana contains three factors: the joy and the delightful sensation and the one-pointedness. But we put our attention on the joy. The delightful sensation is in the background, and we put no attention on it. The one-pointedness, which works against sensual desire during meditation, is something that becomes part of our mental state. If we are one-pointed often enough in meditation, surely there's no reason why we can't be one-pointed in daily life. None whatsoever. In other words, we can be mindful. We can be one-pointedly mindful, as much or as little of it as we can manage. And when we are one-pointedly mindful of what is actually going on, there is no necessity for wishing for something else. The sensual desire, which has already been reduced through the experience of delight and the experience of joy, is further reduced through our ability to be one-pointed, not to be sidetracked to wanting this or that. The Buddha compared sensual desire to being in debt. We are in debt to our senses. We have to renew the contact over and over again. And just as any debt is paid off with interest, the same way we have to pay interest with our senses. What was satisfactory one time is not satisfactory again. We've got to have a bit more, or a bit longer, or a bit nicer. If we don't pay that debt off while we are still hale and hearty, we're still clamoring for sensual contact and sensual gratification on our deathbed. Most people in the world do not practice, so the majority is in that situation. The desire for sensual gratification is a natural phenomena for a human being. We live in the Kamaloka, the sensual realm. It's a totally natural thing. And the strongest of all sensual desires is the sexual desire. And therefore the hardest to get rid of. The sexual desire, as I'm sure everybody knows, can play havoc with our lives, and often does. No need for further explanation, I'm sure everybody knows. So with that, as an antidote, we don't become indifferent. Certain amount of equanimity arises. Equanimity is one of the seven factors of enlightenment. Indifference is its near enemy. It looks similar, but it has nothing in common. We have an explanation here of the first two of the eight jhanas. And I will explain more of it tomorrow. I will explain the others, possibly all the others, up to the eighth, because it will be a quicker explanation, because I will not make reference to the hindrances. Again, we've used up the time, and any of the questions that you have, please put them on bits of paper for tonight.